Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson.
Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. Donald Trump won his first election on the promise of draining the D.C. swamp, but it was simply too deeply entrenched, and many of the people that surrounded him in his first term were very heavily invested in keeping the deep state going. So Trump wasn't able to drain much, if anything, the first time around. Now, in his second term, he's a lot smarter about D.C. politics and has surrounded himself with a whole team of outside-the-box nominees and appointees who are not beholden to the leviathan of the administrative state, and you can see the difference. Cuts by the Department of Government Efficiency alone, DOGE, are creating widespread fury and panic throughout the bloated federal bureaucracy and the Democrat Party of big government totalitarianism. In response to having the status quo obliterated by outsiders like Trump and Elon Musk, the left is literally waging a campaign of domestic terrorism against Musk's car company Tesla and even owners of his vehicles. Another strategy the left has adopted, or actually intensified, since they have always employed this strategy against Trump, is judicial activism. More specifically, Democrat-backed judges throughout the country throwing legal blockades in the way of Trump's agenda. And by Trump's agenda, I mean the will of the people. Because Trump rode a massive red wave to victory in November. Making America great again was the people's mandate. But Democrat leaders don't care about governing according to the will of the people. They prefer rule by a managerial class of elites, who know best, don't you know, about how the masses should live. And that includes rejecting constitutional freedoms and other breaks on left-wing power. How did this bloated bureaucracy come to be? Where did the administrative state come from in the first place? Because it didn't come from the founding fathers, who would be aghast at the monster we have created in the city named after the greatest American, George Washington. Well, I'm glad you asked, because today, my guest at the Right Take has written a book about exactly that, and I had him on a few months ago to talk about that book, and now he has produced a documentary based on it, which I highly recommend. And today we're going to talk about that film and some related issues. He's a great guest. I know you're going to find this episode worth a listen, so stay with us here at the intersection of politics and culture because you don't want to miss this interview. And don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so you don't miss any of the important conversations we are having here. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Don't touch that dial. Guest today at the intersection of politics and culture is a very well-known conservative activism expert. You've no doubt seen him and heard his commentary on Fox News. He's the founder, CEO of American Majority, a nonpartisan political training institute, and also of Voter Gravity, a Republican data firm which works for voter mobilization. He's also the author of, among other books, American Leviathan, The Birth of the Administrative State and Progressive Authoritarianism, which we talked about the last time he was on The Right Take a few months ago. Now that book has been turned into a documentary that's available online, and it is a must-watch. I reviewed it for Front Page Mag recently, so you can look that up there and check it out. Ned Ryan, welcome back to The Right Take Podcast.
Absolutely. Great to be with you, Mark.
Great to have you back. Ned, before we dive into the film, tell us again what goes on at American Majority.
So it's something I founded back in January of 2008. And really, Mark, to be completely honest, swiping a page from the left's playbook, in which we wanted to go in a systematic way, identify good men and women to run at the state and local level, to be involved on school boards and city councils and county commissions and the state house and the state senate, not only to build a farm team for higher office, but at the same time, to have good men and women involved in those levels of government that I think impact our daily lives maybe even more than our federal government does. And a lot of what we do with American Majority is we train people how to be successful in actually winning. I'm a big believer, Mark, in a lot of our trainings, I mention constantly politics is policy. You actually have to know how to win politically. You have to know the nuts and bolts of how to put together a campaign plan, how to fundraise, how to message, all of these things that are important to winning, and do it in a metric-driven, systematic way. And then once you win, you're then in the right place to actually implement policy. So we really train people on the nuts and bolts of how you actually can be successful in running for those state and local offices. And then we do activist training on how activists can change their communities and then their states. And then obviously if we have enough states change, we can have that generational national change as we have a groundswell from the bottom up. But trying to really give people the tools necessary to bring about positive change in an effective way. So that's American Majority writ large.
That is awesome. And that's a service that we really need on our side, because I think we're only just getting started, conservatives, that is, in terms of learning how to be activists and learning how to community organize. The left has been expert at this for decades and decades, and we're just now kind of catching on. So I'm glad that you're out there doing that work.
I will say one last thing on this point, Mark, and I want people to fully understand why the left has been as successful as it has been in this country, even though I think they're in a distinct minority. Good people that are poorly organized, the good ideas that are poorly organized will always lose to people with bad ideas who are properly organized. And the left has been properly organized to win politically, to then be in place to implement their terrible policies. We, on the other hand, have great ideas. I would argue that the ideas that have helped make this country the greatest the world has ever seen, maybe even since the Roman Empire. But we have terrible approach to actually organizing to win. We think that somehow because of the goodness of our ideas, they will somehow magically be implemented. And I think that's in defiance of reality.
Do you think that partly stems from the fact that Democrats tend to think collectively and conservatives tend to have this kind of individualistic spirit that makes us uncomfortable in terms of working together?
I think that's a little bit of it. Also, the left views politics as their religion, and we view it as a necessary evil. And unless we, and listen, politics is never going to save us on a fundamental level, but it is something. You either do politics or politics will do you, right? So you get to actually be involved, or you will find yourself on the wrong end of politics. No, but the left approaches politics as their religion. You know, the administrative state is their holy of holies, the vehicle for salvation. They truly believe this. I mean, I don't know if the modern day progressives like AOC or Jasmine Crockett are smart enough to actually understand what the ideology of progressivism has been for the last 100+ years. But that really is what, you know, the progressives believed at the very founding of this movement for them, that they were going to build a vehicle for salvation in the here and now that would lead to the perfection of mankind. And so it becomes this religious quest. And we, on the other hand, are going, would you please leave me alone? I'd rather enjoy my family and my job, my hobbies, worship God as I please, all of these things. And you, when you get into this situation where we want to be left alone and this is all they want, the left, you find yourself in a situation where we better meet their religious zealotry with our own passion, or we will continue to lose. We cannot have this approach in which we view politics as a necessary evil or like a fun career that we're going to do for 20 years. No, we need to meet their passion with our own if we're actually going to defeat them.
That is absolutely true, every word of it. Okay, about the documentary, you published a book about the administrative state. Why make the film?
Because I wanted people, first of all, I'm fully aware that not everyone's going to actually read a book. Like, let's just face the reality of how people approach getting their news and their information today. But I wanted to have some overlap with the book and the documentary. So for those that have read the book, they'll look at the documentary and go, oh, I remember some of these parts. But there's a lot of things that are different between the book and the documentary. And one of the reasons I wanted to do the documentary was I wanted to have conversations with people in DC right now who are in the belly of Leviathan. And that includes Senator Jim Banks and Senator Rick Scott, Senator Marsha Blackburn, and then a lot of people, Chip Roy, Congressman Chip Roy out of Texas, and then a lot of people who have been in DC, who have been close observers of what is taking place, to communicate to the American people, this is the reality. This is the reality of what is taking place. It's not just Ned Ryan saying that. It's senators, it's congressmen, it's people that have been here for a decade or two or more, saying this is how DC actually operates. And the reason I did it, Mark, wrote the book and then did this documentary, the American people have to understand their very important role in ending the administrative state. You know, we've got Donald Trump, who has the moral and political courage to actually pursue this. Obviously, Elon Musk and Doge, one of the most important reform movements we've seen in decades, if maybe ever. But the American people have to understand what is taking place. And when they have that moment of clarity, then it becomes them going to Congress, who, by the way, I want to touch on this in more detail later in our conversation, but going to Congress, who I think in many ways, if I can say this, has been the villain in the 20th century with the rise of the administrative state, not only empowering them with obscene amounts of money, but then subdelegating their legislative authority to these unelected bureaucrats. So the American people having clarity and going, that's not how Congress is supposed to work, demanding of their elected officials, you have to take back those legislative powers. You actually have to provide real oversight and not blindly fund these out of control bureaucrats who, you know, really are governing, who are spending our money like drunken sailors. And then obviously continuing to support President Trump and his quest to end and break apart the administrative state, and then bracing our judges. This to me is, I think, going to be one of the more interesting fights in which, you know, as we watch these lower level judges in the here and now trying to block Trump's agenda, their Article 3 is absolutely overstepping its bounds and going and inserting itself into the Article 2 branch and trying to dictate to the head of it, that'd be President Trump, what he can or can't do in regards to running the Article 2 branch. So the American people getting clarity and then demanding of those that are supposed to represent them, you will actually do what you're supposed to do, bring us back to a constitutional balance of each one of the branches doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I think once that happens, you know, Phil Hamburger makes this point, and I would just reiterate, once the American people are awake, once they demand this of their elected officials, I think that's the beginning of the end of administrative power. And the American people have to understand it not only revives absolute power, it is one of the greatest threats to our civil liberties, is a great threat to our future freedom and prosperity. So the beginning of the end of administrative power is the American people waking up and having clarity. And that's why I wrote the book. That's why I did the documentary.
And in that documentary, you state, and I'm going to quote you here, we are at a singular moment in American history where President Trump can unmake the unconstitutional state and restore representative government to this country and end the rule of the bureaucrat, unquote. Now, he's barely 10 weeks in as president, but how do you think he's doing so far?
I think one of the things that he has done so far, and again, he is up against tremendous resistance, obviously from the Article 3 branch, and I think we're just getting warmed up on the, you know, the federal employees and their unions and all of that. But he's bringing this conversation to the forefront with Elon Musk and Doge. I have to tell you, Mark, I've been in D.C. 25 years, which is crazy. I came as a young child. I just want to make that very clear. I came as a young child, but I've been here 25 years. My dad was in Congress. I worked at the White House. I've been around the town. I was actually stunned with their revelations about USAID. And I just want to tell people, for those that were watching some of these revelations, that's maybe 0.7% to 1% of all government spending. The gross abuse and fraud that took place. And I think what's happening, not only is Donald Trump continuing to empower Elon Musk, but I think there's kind of been this epiphany and this journey along the way in the last 10 weeks or so with Elon, in which, again, Doge, we're going to go after waste, fraud, and abuse. Wait a minute. This is about the rule of bureaucrats, which I would just remind people, that's not a bug. That's a feature. It's exactly what progressives have wanted for the last 100 years, that an unelected bureaucracy in this administrative state would do the real governing and would do the real managing of this country. So rule of bureaucrat is something that was always intended. It's not a mistake. And so when people go, the system's broken, according to who? According to progressives, it's working beautifully. That's what they always envisioned. Now, according to a constitutional republic, that has nothing to do with it. But I think, so you see Elon going waste, fraud, and abuse. Oh my gosh, we have rule of bureaucrat. To now, and it is kind of crazy, we have a slush fund money laundering operation that our government's been turned into by the left to not only fund their friends and allies, but also to fund deeply un-American projects to undermine this country, to undermine the citizens, to enact policies in an end-around run into these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations that I would argue, Mark, are absolutely every day to the tune of hundreds of billions, if not more, working every day to undermine this country and our future. And so I think Elon and Trump are getting to that point where they realize this is a system. The waste, fraud, and abuse and all these things I just described, that's the poisonous fruit of the poisonous tree. And the poisonous tree is the administrative state. So you have to break the actual cause of why this is taking place. And that truly is this massive sprawling bureaucracy that is the administrative state that I call American Leviathan.
I think Trump learned a lesson from his first term as president. And this time he surrounded himself with a lot of unorthodox cabinet members and other appointees who are, they're not necessarily career politicians, but they are smart patriots who want to take a wrecking ball to the status quo. What do you think about his team so far? Do you think they're up to this task, this job of dismantling the deep state, or do you think anyone is up to that task?
I think that so far we are seeing really good signs, really positive signs. I think the full story, we're going to have to wait to see how it plays out. This is not something that's going to be done, fixed overnight. You don't click your fingers at something that's been building for over 100 years, and then in a year and a half, this is my one quibble, if there is one, with Doge, that we're going to declare victory, you know, July 4th, 2026 on the 250th anniversary. No, you're not, because I don't think victory will fully be achieved. I think for years. And I make the argument all the time. I think you have to have the right people holding political power in this country for 12 years for us to actually get back to where I think we should be in regards to having representative government and a constitutional republic, a government of, by, and for the people. So I think you're seeing political and moral courage. I love what Linda McMahon is doing with the Department of Education. I remember the last time we talked. I mean, one of the things I recommend in the book but didn't address really in the documentary is let's take it all the way. Right. You shut down the Department of Education. You implode the building. Let's build Trump's Garden of Heroes over that spot. Build a Freedom Park. And so Linda McMahon is actually lobbying at this moment members of Congress to say we have to go down this path. So I love the fact that she is taking the approach that I hope I am the last Secretary of Education. You know, Pete Hegseth has been doing some tremendous work at Department of Defense and cutting, you know, thousands of what I consider non-essential employees and contractors. But Mark, to give perspective on where I think we need to eventually end up, there are 800,000 non-essential employees in our federal government that the government has defined as non-essential. Until we get to that number, you know, I don't think we will have been as successful as we need to be. And then beyond that, not only removing those people from the federal government, but also removing those positions from the federal roles. Because the thing that has to be stressed is Trump has a singular moment in American history in which he can unmake the administrative state. But unless we actually have fundamental change in which Congress is going to have to step up to the plate and actually be alongside of him, which again, I think is a real question of do they have the moral and political courage? I would really question if they do in the moment. But for this to be long term and lasting, you have to remove a lot of these positions from the federal roles and say, we are going to shift this entirely away from what I believe to be an increasingly authoritarian approach to government back to representative government. So the rest of the story is to be written, but so far it's been a good start, a great start.
A couple of related questions. One, have you been able to or tried to get your book and or the documentary to Trump himself? And mm-hmm. The second question,
yeah.
I'm sure you tried. And the second question is, if Trump picked you as a close advisor, and frankly, I don't know why he hasn't yet anyway, but what advice or strategy would you want to impart to him?
So actually, he's blurbed the book twice on Truth Social and has been, you know, pushing it, and it's been fantastic. I have sent the documentary to his assistant in hopes that he will have some time. Of course, he's extremely busy. There's a, you know, just incredible amount of things taking place in the world, which I was reminded of sitting with him 2 weeks ago. We had a great meeting. We sat for about an hour and a half. JD came in. It was a lovely conversation about a whole host of things. I did bring up to him, Mark, a couple different things. One, and I've mentioned this on TV and I've written about it. On X, he needs to do a presidential commission on transparency and accountability. He goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you should have a commission that you appoint. You should have Pam Bondi and Kash Patel and John Ratcliffe and Tulsi Gabbard come before this commission, have the hearings televised so that the American people can understand what's happened the last 8 or 9 years with the massive abuse of DOJ, FBI, I would argue the intel community. Let the American people fully understand what's taking place, because this was done in our name. This was done in our name with our money, and the American people need to fully understand. So I think that's one of the things that I really want him to do to bring about greater transparency and accountability. And then at the end, the commission comes up with a list of recommendations, which again would be devolving, downsizing, deconstructing a lot of these departments and getting them back to the proper balance. And I said, sir, you know, I'd love for you to have a speech. Give a speech, 15, 20 minutes on why Elon is doing Doge. Like, your goal is to restore representative government in this country, to have rule of the people, in which they make these elected officials, they're the stewards of the money and power given to them. I don't know. We'll see what he does. He's like, well, I talk about this all the time. I'm like, yeah, but I think you got to put like a fine point on and say, this is why we're doing Doge. This is why we have these reform movements. This is why we're trying to do all of these things, is to return power to you. To return us to a power, you know, to a government in which a government every day is thinking about how do we best serve the American people, advance and protect their priorities. Because I can assure you, Mark, what we've experienced for decades in DC has absolutely nothing to do with that. So we'll see what he does, but you know, we have good conversations.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. The bulk of the documentary is given over to your interviews with congressmen and senators, or congresspeople, I should say, senators, historians, policy strategists, some other DC insiders, as well as your own commentary, of course. Was there any one interviewee whose insights you feel really nailed the points you were trying to make? For example, one of the key points, or one of the lines that I really liked from the film was from Steve Cortez, a former advisor to Trump and Vance, who says that DC is the city named after perhaps the greatest American ever, George Washington, of course, but it does not function any longer as the protector of the American people. It's the abuser of the American people.
I thought Rachel Bovard, who's been a staffer for Rand Paul, who's been on the Hill for, I would argue, a decade plus, I thought she made some just brilliant points. So she was one of the ones who really just described, you know, how DC actually operates. And really made a point, and I joke about this in American Majority Trainings, I mentioned in the book, and she's the one that made the point in the documentary. But when you get to where you have subdelegated legislative authority to unelected bureaucrats, they don't want to be troubled by the rabble, right? They don't think they should answer to the rabble, to the dirty little peasants. That's how they view us. And so it becomes this idea of we're right, you're wrong, I decide, you're going to jail. And I thought that was a really astute point, as we saw during the whole COVID debacle, in which a lot of people were like, no, you'll do what we say. There's no conversation, there's no debate, there's no freedom of speech, there's no freedom of free flow of information. If there's anything that we disagree with, we're going to censor it, and you will submit or you're going to jail. So I thought that was a great point. The other one that was really a pleasant surprise to me was Bradley Watson of Hillsdale. He was a last minute ad, and he sat down probably for, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes. I mean, the thing that was interesting, Mark, in the whole documentary is we probably did 9 hours of footage of filming. How do you compress that into 62 minutes, keep the narrative arc and make all the points that you want and have, you know? So I will say this, it was a great learning process. First documentary I've ever done, a lot of lessons learned. How do we do it better next time? But taking all this and compressing it into 62 minutes, and Bradley Watson did a fantastic job. I mean, when he talks about our democracy and how the left uses our democracy, you know, he made the point of like that, what they're saying is synonymous with whatever the administrative state does is right and legitimate. And so he's like, when people use that term to bolster the administrative state, it in fact has nothing to do at all with our constitutional republic. So anytime anyone hears our democracy, it really is them trying to bolster, defend, and protect rule of the bureaucrat in administrative state, which again, to further the point, has nothing to do with representative government, has nothing to do with our constitutional republic, and I would argue becomes totalitarian and authoritarian, and is quite frankly deeply un-American.
Ned, one of the key points that you bring out in both the book and the movie is the radically different perspectives on human nature that are held by the left and the right. How have those different perspectives got us to where we are today?
I think that the one point that I wanted to emphasize in the book, and then obviously bring it up in the documentary, was, you know, fundamentally there are two very different approaches to government, but it then is, goes even further and is based on two very radically different views of human nature. And our founders were optimistic realists. They were realistic about human nature. And I think this has to be stated, and that's why I did in the book and the documentary, that you have to be realistic about human nature. We are imperfect human beings in an imperfect world. Perfection is impossible. I mean, we're capable of great good, Mark. We're incapable of sustained good. So the founders looked at human nature and said, we believe that we have God-given rights. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and that to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men. That is the basis of a rights-based government. How do we put together a government that protects and secures those rights and takes none of them away, while at the same time not trusting human nature? Well, you create the machinery of the republic, in which there's a diffusion of power, separation of power, in which you have Article 1, branch legislative, the Article 2, executive, the Article 3, judicial, and then the idea and concept of federalism, which I think has been lost on us, in which all power is not expressly dedicated to the clearly stated for the federal government, are then delegated and given to the states. With progressive statists, they were utopian statists, in which they truly believed that they could bring heaven to earth. They believed that human nature could be perfected in the here and now. And their idea was that they would bring about salvation in the here and now, in this world, through the state. And they viewed the state as salvation. We have to have these brilliant bureaucrats who will do the governing, and through the application of science and all of these other ideas, we will bring about perfection of society and eventually the apotheosis of mankind, which is the deification of mankind. We'll reach the end of history. And we will finally move in from an irrational state to a perfectly rational one. Well, the idea of how they got from, you know, point A to point B and reaching that higher plane and that elevated status of human nature was to consolidate power into the administrative state. They really thought the separation of powers was a bug. Woodrow Wilson and others wrote about this, in which they wanted to consolidate the legislative, the executive, and the judicial powers all into the hands of these bureaucrats, which I would also remind people resides primarily inside the Article II branch, the administrative state does, with all of these various powers, consolidated power in the hands of relatively few, salvation would be achieved. And then the state was to be able to go into every aspect of life to achieve salvation, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, you name it. And so you see the beginnings of that mindset of we will bring salvation in the here and now, we will perfect mankind, the state of salvation, to where we are today, in which the state is extremely invasive. It feels that it has the right to be in every aspect of our lives, because again, the whole point is salvation. But the problem that you end up with, Mark, is, again, going back to how founders viewed human nature, we are imperfect human beings. We often do what we can, not what we should. We're no angels. To quote Madison. And the problem with human nature and consolidated power is that it eventually becomes authoritarian. And so the basis for where we are today in two very different competing forms of government is all based on human nature and how you perceive it. And then how do you structure government based off your view of human nature? Our founders nailed it. They knew they were imperfect too. And they didn't trust themselves. So how do we solve this problem in an imperfect world? And that's what they came up with, a constitutional republic with the diffusion of power. And the progressives, for the most part, rejected that wholesale. And this is how you end up where we are today with rule the bureaucrat. You will submit or go to jail. We're the ones that decide. Shut up, you dirty little peasants. So that's how we ended up where we are.
Ned, I admire your optimism and your determination about breaking the administrative state. But as you've already noted, Trump's opposition, and I'm not talking about just Democrats now, but also some establishment Republicans, his opposition is going to fight every step of the way, tooth and nail. And then what about this new threat that he's facing, which you also touched on earlier, random judges around the country throwing up roadblocks to his agenda? I mean, I mean, the Democrats have always used lawfare to try to stop Trump, but this seems to be taking things to a whole new level. It seems to be their new go-to strategy now for slowing Trump's agenda.
It is. It is the continuation of the political lawfare that we saw over the last 4 years. It's now coming through the Article III judicial branch, in which, you know, these are all, a lot of them are Obama-appointed judges, Democrats, leftists, who have decided, well, if we didn't win the elections, we'll figure out a way to slow down policy ideas that we disagree with. And we're going to have these lower level judges insert themselves into the Article II branch and basically dictate to not only Trump, but, you know, Secretary of Defense and others, how you're supposed to actually do this. That was not at all what the founders envisioned. So I think Trump, there's a couple different approaches, and we'll see if, you know, anybody can actually demonstrate the right moral and political courage outside of Trump. One, I think Trump has to make it very clear for the good of the country, to restore constitutional balance, all of these things. You have made a decision that I believe to be truly unconstitutional. You cannot dictate to me, the duly elected president of the United States, who's head of the Article II branch, how the Article II branch is supposed to run. So you've made your decision, and kind of channel Andrew Jackson. You've made your decision, now enforce it, which, of course, they can't. Congress has to step up to the plate. They're not going to impeach judges, Mark, because they lack the courage to do so. It would be nice if they said, you know, based off our constitutional authority, we could defund these lower courts. That would be a nice step. But, you know, in the short term, if you really wanted to solve this, and I don't think John Roberts really wants to solve it, you would have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court stepping in and going, for the legitimacy and future, well, for the future legitimacy of the Article III branch, the Supreme Court is going to step in and put massive guardrails on what these lower level judges can do or not do. So I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think Congress is going to show the moral and political courage that is necessary to actually do what they're supposed to do. So I think Trump's going to have to go, well, that's lovely. I appreciate so much your insights, which I completely disagree with on constitutional grounds. I will continue to implement the will of the American people, because I want to remind people, Mark, Donald Trump wasn't running on like pastel shades of like maybe kind of sort of a little different than Joe Biden. He was running on very bold, bright colors of, we are going to have tariffs. I'm going to deport people. I'm going to have good trade deals. We are going to completely fundamentally change the entire approach on everything. And he won in a very convincing fashion. So what the article, what the judges are doing right now, not only by trying to stop Trump and his agenda, they are in defiance of the will of the American people. And so for the good of the American people, for the will of the American people to actually triumph, I think Trump's going to have to say, have fun with that one. I will continue down this path.
I'd like to see him do that.
I hope so. And I think he's got the courage to do it.
I agree. Part of the film, and the book, of course, is given over to a battle plan for slaying the Leviathan of the state. Can you share a strategy or two or a couple of actions that the average citizen can take to help the Trump administration overthrow the deep state?
Well, I would go back to what I mentioned earlier. They have to, I would hope they watch the documentary and have, I think, a bit of a startling revelation about how this actually works and go, wait a minute. I want my elected officials in Congress to take a hot second before you vote to completely fund a lot of these departments and agencies run by these bureaucrats that are out of control. So let's have a conversation, you know, where the American people can go directly to their elected officials and go, a key part of oversight, that is Congress's responsibility, moral obligation, is to provide oversight, and part of oversight is funding. Why don't you stop blindly funding these unelected bureaucrats? But the problem being, Mark, and again, you have to get to the idea of self-preservation, in which if they will not do what they're supposed to do, you have to go and say, well, your political career might be at an end. So this is going to require the American people to not only awaken and lobby, but also go, okay, if you're not going to listen, we'll take you out in a primary. Because I think a lot of elected officials find this situation that we're in currently extremely convenient. And Chip Roy mentions this, and Jim Banks mentions it in the documentary, in which a lot of elected officials want to pass these 4,000 or 5,000 page bills that they don't read, that are kind of a framework for how, you know, these things are to be approached. And then they send it over to the bureaucrats, who through their statutes and regulations are the ones actually doing the governing. And then the elected official goes home to his district and goes, hey, you know, I know that was a terrible decision made by that bureaucrat, which, by the way, the elected official has been funding and empowering. I think that's a terrible decision. You need to send me back to DC so I can fight these unelected bureaucrats and these terrible decisions. It allows them to duck the really hard decisions because that they're afraid if they actually have to make hard legislative decisions, they might not get reelected and come back for another 2 years or 6 years. And so the American people have to step in and go, you're going to do this. If you don't, we're going to find new leadership. And I think they've got to continue. I mean, obviously, the public show of support for what Donald Trump is doing cannot be underestimated, because Donald Trump and his administration are going to be under nonstop attack from the corporate propagandists, from the left. I would argue the American people have an obligation to step up if they truly believe this is a fight worth having. And I believe it is. We support you. Go for it. Don't even think about stopping. And you can kind of see this reflected in public opinion polls, where despite the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching by a lot of people in D.C., these things are extremely popular with the American people, DOGE and all these projects. So continuing to show that support, continuing to let their voices be heard and say, this is what we want. This is what we voted for. Don't even think for a second you should stop.
Ned, another two-part question. First, how can people watch the documentary? And second, where can people go to keep up with your work?
So they can go to my X handle, which is at Ned Ryan, N-E-D-R-Y-U-N. I posted the full documentary. It's my penned post on X, so you can watch it for free. It's 62 minutes and 15 seconds, something like that. And if you're not on X, go to AmericanLeviathan.com. And what I'm going to be doing, Mark, is the documentary is posted there. And it's a Substack, and I'm starting to do some posts, and hopefully on a regular basis, maybe a couple a week, really start to continue kind of a continuing education for this conversation that we've had in the book and the documentary about what's taking place in DC, are we making strides, all of those things. So, you know, AmericanLeviathan.com or my X handle to watch the documentary. And then, you know, I'd say follow me on X at Ned Ryan. And then AmericanMajority.org, obviously follow our work there. And then, you know, I'm not doing as much opinion writing as I used to, but used to write pretty regularly for AmericanGreatness.com, AmGreatness.com. But, you know, when you start writing books, I'm into a new book already. It's the sequel to The Adversaries, which was my first historical fiction. It's a sequel to that. When you start writing books, Mark, you find yourself a little brain fried to write opinion pieces. So I would say the best place is at Ned Ryan. I try and post clips of me on TV and just kind of my, you know, commentary in the moment. And I think that would be a good place for people to follow me on a daily basis.
Great. Good to know. Ned Ryan, thanks again for joining us at The Right Take. Keep up the great work, sir.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Mark.
Listeners, I urge you to check out American Leviathan, both the book and the documentary, and keep up with Ned. We need more patriots like him. And thank you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so you don't miss any of the important conversations we're having here. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave a positive review. See you next time. The Right Take with Mark Tapson is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Front Page Magazine. Unauthorized reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.